So I'll come to order. Messages from the house.
January the 25th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 61, Banking Division Nationwide Licensing System, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 133, Human Trafficking, substitute number 1, ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 25th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 62, Innocent Landowner Amendments, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 98, County Fees, ayes 52, no 7, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 25th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 188, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 104, Education State Administration. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 39, noes 20, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Concurrence. Senator Coe, are you ready on message number 188 in reference to Senate File 104?
I am, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move message number 188, concurrence request.
Oh, wait.
I don't have it.
Got to read it.
He needs to read. Reading clerk will read message 188 first.
January the 25th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 188, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 104, Education State Administration. The Senate file above listed passed on the third reading in its amended form as follows. Ayes 39, noes 20, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Now, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I would move message number 188, concurrence request, being original Senate File 104, Education State Administration, and ask the body to vote aye. As I walk you through this, there's a number of amendments. Most of them don't do too much. The first one, you'll see Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. All this does is say that the State Board or the Department of Education will provide information necessary to the State Board to perform their duties under Wyoming Statute 212304. If you go to Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, this is a change from the way this bill left the Senate. What this ends up doing, if you go down to page 26, line 17, and the director of the State Department of Education, the state superintendent, and the director shall be ex officio members. So it takes the superintendent off as a voting member, off the state board. Also, with the new director that is in this bill becomes an ex officio member. Moving over to the next page, the third reading amendment number 1. This just says that that the report shall include a plan specifying a process for completion of the department organization and professional capacity building over a period not to exceed 5 years. So they're trying to plan for the future when they start reorganizing. If you go down to third reading amendment number 2, in addition, the Department of A&I shall immediately secure office space for the state superintendent of public instruction in facilities separate from the Department of Education. Down at the bottom, third reading amendment number 3, it says the governor and the interim director shall review all personnel decisions, included but not limited to transfers, change of jobs, etc., within 60 days prior to the effective date of this act. So what this does, this provides some protection for some of the employees that might have had a problem down there going back 60 days. Finally, at third reading amendment number 5, this gives the superintendent some more duties. She's to identify professional development needs for Wyoming schools, establish a plan to address professional development needs, contracts with necessary expertise to provide professional development in Wyoming, and conduct up to 5 regional workshops each year. So this gives more duties back to the superintendent. Mr. President, that's the concurrence request. I don't think there's anything in there that we can't get along with. I think it's a pretty good concurrence request, and I'd urge the body to vote aye.
Discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little more discussion on the removal of the state superintendent off the board. And I'm thinking about constitutionally, if there's any standing that by her being on that board that under constitutional litigation that might enhance our position or it doesn't. Maybe somebody that's understands a lot more about than I do. And I think when it left her, that was fine. I liked her on the board. I thought that was okay. And then I'm not so sure about what was the status of the new director? Would they have not been on the board? They'd have been ex officio in our bill, or did this change that as well?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have those concerns as well. And if you look at Article 7, Section 14, it says the general supervision of public schools shall be entrusted to the state superintendent of public instruction. Then, Mr. Chairman, it goes on to say whose powers and duties shall be prescribed by law. I think there's two duties here. One is the duty of the general supervision of public schools is entrusted to the state superintendent. Now, general means all-encompassing. It doesn't mean limited. And supervision means that they have the ability to generally supervise everything in public schools. Now, we've limited this, her duties extremely by this bill. I think we did some good work over here in the Senate to bring some of those duties back. One was the area in which she could be a voting member on the state board. Now, the difference between being a voting member, and ex officio is the difference between us sitting behind this glass and everybody else out there in the lobby. So you have to ask yourself the question, if we had the duty to supervise public schools, would we be able to do that more effectively and more completely on this side of the glass or that side of the glass? And the obvious answer is that, yes, you can exercise your duties on this side of the glass much more effectively. And the other part, prescribed by law, we have a duty to prescribe and formulate legislation to enable the superintendent of public instruction to perform her constitutional duties of the general supervision of public schools. Now, arguably, if she were a voting member, we could have said that perhaps through that vote that she had on the State Board of Education when it left this body, that she might be able to do that. I believe that she can't do that at this point in time. We have no argument to sustain any constitutional challenge in court as the bill stands now. Even with that, I think our argument is extremely weak. But, Mr. President, that's one area that I think that if you want this to even have a chance of standing a court battle, you should consider that fact. I may vote aye for this concurrence primarily because of that, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I on and for the amendment, and I encourage you to vote aye. With respect to the question our colleague asked from Shoshone, when you begin to, first of all, when we sent the bill out, we had one, the state superintendent voting, and we had the director not voting. And I think on the House side, they saw that as a conflict, where you have one voting, one not voting. And they went back to not voting. And I can simply say that was, they essentially retreated, if you will, to the position that was proposed by the interim work by the Accountability Committee, which had proposed that, the superintendent have a non-voting role. Now, with respect to whether or not you have a greater amount of persuasion and advocacy as a voting member versus a non-voting member, I don't agree that whether or not you're persuasive and a strong advocate has to do with your ideas and not your vote. When you're one vote among 11 or 12, you're simply not, the voting is not what makes you a strong advocate for that. And for those of you or us that are on, our liaisons, ex officio members to the State Building Commission, other committees, you know that sitting up at the same table elevates you to the position where, frankly, people do listen to you and you're in a strong position. And oftentimes you can have a stronger position by not being a voting member and encouraging a vote. In fact, you know that happens because on this floor, many times people say, I have a conflict. But having that conflict and I'm not going to vote, here's my view. And when folks do that, what they're really saying is, I have a horse in this race, and I want you to understand my view. And oftentimes, those people are the strongest advocates for one position or another. With respect to the State Board of Ed, the State Board, it was created as an entity principally to be a rulemaking entity separate in part and apart from the superintendent. It was never, the purpose of doing that was to divide power and move it away. And now we're talking now about the supervision power or the rule and essentially the rule and regulating power. So nothing changes in this. And whether you're strong, I mean, you could probably talk your position, yourself into either position. The point is, it's not worth sending it back to a conference. It's a position, it's a distinction that really will make no difference in the long run. And you cannot say, very strong, that somehow having a position to vote on a rulemaking body, one of 12, is something that would satisfy or not satisfy the constitutional obligation. But this board goes clear back to constitutional history at a time where there was no crossover, where the board was created statutorily to divide power from the superintendent, and the superintendent is now allowed to have the advocacy to persuade. And I think originally the superintendent was really the superintendent for all the schools and went around and probably on a horse and buggy and went to school after school just to be the roving superintendent. And over time, schools grew. They have acquired their own superintendents. And the supervision that exists to go around and look at the schools continues to exist. And under the Constitution and under this bill, we continue to assign those powers to the state superintendent. I'd urge you to vote aye for the concurrence.
Further discussion. Senator, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. And just to clarify one point, the superintendent was not a voting member of the Board of Education previously. This was something that I believe it was in 2006 when the superintendent of public instruction became a voting member of the State Board of Education. So from a constitutional standpoint, it just doesn't carry water to assume that this would be problematic. It's a choice of this body. It's a legislative authority, and, Mr. President, we certainly have the authority to do so. I believe concurrence also is the correct choice on this matter.
Further discussion? Senator Burns.
Mr. President, if I could ask a question of those who were aware of the thinking on the House side. On page 2 of the concurrence report, page 61, line 5, that's where they are going to find an office. They're basically removing the superintendent from the Department of Education, putting an office separate from there. And it was my thinking that the hopes would be that the superintendent, whoever the superintendent was, and the director would actually be working in concurrence with each other and cooperating with each other. And so I'm trying to, I guess the question, my question is, how can that not be looked at as punitive?
Further discussion? Remember, you only have two times to speak, 5 minutes each time. Senator Coe?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you for recognizing me, because the sponsor of the bill does. I didn't want to stand up after his second time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Another question is on page 2, line 60 after line 24, insert. There appears to be a double standard here. And some discrimination to the employees. And, folks, I don't think we should discriminate between employees. And what this amendment does, it definitely does discriminate. It offers protection to people who had lost their job or transferred or changed their duties or were terminated 60 days prior to the effective date of this act. But it says nothing about the new director coming in and offering the same type of protections to the people that exist there. They're both state employees. They're both in the same class. Yet one class of employees has protection and the other class of employees doesn't have protection. Essentially says you can sweep the board clean, kick anybody out that you want. But if you're terminated beforehand, welcome back with open arms if you want to come back. Now, Mr. President, that's an obvious class discrimination between two groups of similar situated state employees.
Senator Nicholas, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. In response to both of the questions, one with respect to why did the House ask for segregation of facilities, and why did the House want to identify employees that may have been terminated or discharged within the last 60 days or quit under stress. They go about the same issue. There was debate on the House and concern on the House side with respect to the treatment of employees. Now, if you're a current employee at the time that this happens, you already have vested rights. And so the executive department could not simply walk in and say, you're gone, you're gone. Those rights are vested. The issue became about employees that felt like they were whistleblowers and or were selected out for non-rehire 3 days before their 1 year their 1 year probationary period. And some folks, and all this says is that instead of just letting those people go out and without any remedy or go out and hire a lawyer, what this will do is simply provide an opportunity for the new director to be with those people, find out what the real reasons were, and maybe find that they can be reemployed or re-brought back. We're going to be fair to them. So, in fact, it gives them not as many rights as existing employed employees would have. It gives them fewer rights, but it gives them an opportunity to discuss. And because of these tensions that have been developing over a period of time, there was a belief on the House side that a segregation of facilities would be appropriate for the esprit de corps and the professionalism to move the department on. Now, what the bill doesn't say is whether or not the superintendent stays and we move the other staff out, or vice versa. That's left to ANI, depending on space management. But we do need to recognize that the superintendent's elected person is entitled to have a dignified office, and I'm certain that ANI will recognize that responsibility and make sure that appropriate facilities are provided.
Further discussion? You ready for the question?
Yes.
Question's been called. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 104, and you've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hicks?
Hines? No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 104. House bills on first reading. House Bill 98, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 98, County Fee, sponsored by Representative Moniz, an act relating to county clerks. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 52, no, 7, excused 1.
House Bill 98 is referred to Committee number 7, Corporations. House Bill 62, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 62, Innocent Landowner Amendments, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to environmental quality. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 62 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. Reports from standing committees.
January the 25th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 103, Electronic Cigarettes, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 25th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 147, Stroke and Heart Attack Treatment Centers, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Esquibel.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Mr. Chairman, we all are proud of our university's basketball team, especially in the women's team, and the product of Sheridan High School, Kayla Woodward, and the product of that she came from. The Sheridan Girls High School basketball team is up above you in the balcony up there. They have missed her so much that they are now 13-1. And they're down here to teach a lesson to the two Cheyenne schools tonight and tomorrow. Mr. Chairman, that loss that they have came overtime, I'm sure, as a result of the decision of a referee of questionable parentage. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that you make welcome the Blue Machine from Sheridan. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, one more point.
Go ahead.
I had lunch with them during the during our lunch break today, and 22 of them managed to eat 56 pieces of pizza.
That's very, very relevant information. Thank you, Senator Burns. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 36. The reading clerk will read Senate File 36.
Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Want to do it?
Senator. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements, was something that we looked at in the Corporations Committee in the interim. We took up as an interim topic to begin to look at all the different legal publications that are required across the state of Wyoming for all different agencies, different types of state business, on and on and on. And we found out that that was really going to be a big, daunting task. And that so what we ended up doing was actually establishing a task force of industry and representatives of WAM and the county commissioners to sit down and talk about this over the course of the next interim. But, Mr. Chairman, in the course of looking at this, we found one requirement that just literally makes no sense whatsoever and cost the insurance customers of Wyoming about $600,000 a year, and serves no purpose. And, Mr. Chairman, what the deal is that there's a publication requirement that insurance companies have their certificate and a summary of their financials to be published in a newspaper of general circulation in Wyoming, and is published for 6 successive days somewhere in the state. Now, I can imagine what back when this state was much younger, and, in fact, the tall senator from Natrona County was much younger, too, that when they would ride around, you would buy insurance, and that was probably an important thing to be able to look at a newspaper and find out something about that insurance company that you were buying insurance from. But as it works now, It's a random lottery process where all these insurance companies, they're assigned to different newspapers, and different newspapers will make the required publication. But there is no correlation, Mr. Chairman, whatsoever between the customer and where it's published. So if I'm in Lander and I'm looking to buy insurance on February 2nd, and I want to see how this insurance company is doing and whether it's financially solvent and that its certificate is in good standing, how would I possibly know that that information was published in the Lovell paper in June of the year before? There's just no connection whatsoever, Mr. Chairman. Now, I don't know if people nowadays actually check on the financial solvency of their their insurance that they purchase. But if they do, I'm guessing that they probably look online. Or maybe they consider shopping for insurance, and maybe someone hands them a policy. Maybe they'll look that policy up. Maybe they'll call the insurance commissioner. Maybe they'll look on the insurance commissioner's website. But there is nothing that serves consumers by the current way that these are published. It costs $600,000 a year, and what this does is take that requirement away, and it makes it so that there will be a link on the insurance commissioner's website, and that link will make it so that a customer can look up, find the company they're trying to buy insurance from, see what their standing is, and it would be current information readily available at the time that they're buying insurance or any time they want to check on their company. That's very different than what's in the law now, Mr. Chairman. It would save $600,000 a year for our ratepayers, and that's why I bring the bill.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Buckstetter.
Related to my business income, I'll be declaring conflict on the vote.
Conflict so noted. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, a question for the bill sponsor. And what I'm concerned about is how people really do, how are they going to know the solvency, sure, the strength, I think they need to know that, of whomever they're buying insurance from. And it's fine if it's on the insurance commissioner's website, but people won't know that. Somehow you got to let them know that you can get a hold of this information. And I really do think the state has an obligation to do that, because we require people to buy insurance. Try driving without car insurance and get stopped by the highway patrol. They'll issue you a summons to show that you have insurance. You can't mortgage your home without getting insurance. We require you to buy insurance. Come 2014, the federal government is going to require that you buy health insurance. And somehow we have to make sure we've got an absolute direct link so people can tell if I'm buying it from the Outback Insurance Company, they're a good outfit. And just saying it's going to be on a website, on a link from a website, that may help a great many people. But I know a lot of my friends and neighbors, they won't have the foggiest notion. They won't even know it's there. They may not even know that the insurance commissioner has a website. But they can't access it. And it seems to me we've got to figure out, and I think I support the bill. But what I'm not seeing is an alternative so people, when they're forced to buy insurance, or they become a criminal, how are they going to find out whether it's a good company or a bad company?
Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a wonderful question. And during the time that that question was answered, I typed in the name of my insurance company that I have for automobile. I'm able to pull up customer complaints, the rating of the company. I can see where they're licensed, and I can access their annual reports, all without it being done anywhere. But if indeed this law were passed, you would see probably one of the first levels of when you type in the name of your company in a search engine, it would come up as available at the insurance company's website. That's the world we're in now. It's different. Now, we could require that you publish somewhere that you can look up at your insurance company online. But let me ask you this. Who made a major purchase of any kind in the past month? And how many of you looked up online about what you were buying? Think about that. Insurance is no different. Comes up just as simply and much more effective for consumers in the state of Wyoming, and doesn't cost $600,000.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, speaking on and for the bill, the current publication requirement is just totally ineffective. And what we heard in the interim committee, and I'm having trouble separating out interim committee from the standing committee, and was that people just don't use the current publication, that basically what they do is trust the state regulation of insurance companies to keep their insurance company solvent. And, Mr. Chairman, that's well-placed trust. We have got the solvency regulations through the NAIC done well enough so that in the most recent big financial bust, I can't think of a single significant insurance company that went broke. There was one holding company that's well-known that went belly up, but that's its insurance subsidiaries that were state-regulated were just fine. We do a good job regulating that, and we do have also guarantee associations that, in addition, protect the public. This publication requirement is a hangover from the old days before the state insurance regulation had really gotten its stride, Mr. Chairman, was doing an effective job. I can think of one case since I've been down here where we've had a significant issue with that, and that was where this state and some others combined to put one of our medical malpractice insurers in significant difficulty. Now, their regulators forced them to withdraw from states like this that were super expensive, and that insurance has so far proved to have been good. But that's the only case I can think of where the consumers would have had a real need to look at the financial statements. So the current thing is just totally ineffective, and we need to do something different.
Well, Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I think as I was standing up, the final words that were expressed really kind of got to the issue that I wanted to speak to, and the final words were we need to do something different. And, you know, as I look at this whole exercise that we're going to go in 2014 in regard to selecting different plans and maybe a broader, perhaps a myriad of things, it brings to mind in regard to a lot of the Medicaid problems. Many times, you know, in your positions, you become navigators for many of your constituents. I have had a lot of questions in regard to Medicare. And, of course, that's more of a federal issue, and many times I tried to kick that off to our federal representatives. But what I found out, that there are individuals out there that are call themselves, in many instances, senior advocates, which brings to mind as we move into this complicated health care selection era that we're going to go into, we're all going to be challenged in regard to how to help navigate people into that. Now, I don't have any suggestions at the moment, but I will tell you that the experience with Medicare and all the different providers and Medicare Part B and sub-providers and all that is, I think, just a preview in regard to the challenges we're going to have in assisting people to make decisions about their health care selections. And I would encourage us then, through these conversations, to investigate ways that we can help people navigate in these very complicated and difficult situations. One, of course, is which is under discussion right now, but I think that's only partially what's going to be needed in order to help these folks make good choices. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising around against the bill, we are headed into some changes. neighbors that live in my community, the older neighbors that we have, I'm pretty sure I know most of them, and I know they don't spend any time, unless it's to look at grandchildren's pictures on the internet. And so while we live on the internet, most of us do daily and a lot of the day, there's certainly a large segment of my community, and I suspect if you think about who your neighbors are in each one of your communities that don't spend a lot of time on the internet or still aren't comfortable gaining their information and knowledge from there.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the committee of the whole amendment, may I ask that to be read in at this time?
Yes, you may. Well, we have the reading of the amendment, committee of the whole amendment, number one.
Senate File 36, Committee of the Whole Amendment, number one, page one, line three.
Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this Committee of the Whole Amendment. What this amendment does is to provide a publication requirement that I think will be meaningful to many of our constituents. It has the commissioner putting out the list of all the insurers who filed an annual statement to each newspaper that take legal advertisement. Newspapers publish the list annually. The list includes the NAIC number, which is something you may need to look up further information about the company. If you go to the internet, it gives a ranking, reflects the company's financial strength, and the cost of the publication is shared equally among the companies on the list. They're the ones that pay the cost of the current advertising. Mr. Chairman, I'm informed that if you wanted to keep the subsidy to the newspapers the same, you would publish the list three times. I thought that, well, this was an opportunity to save some money, but we ought to publish this one time, and it would give information that I think people would use when they looked at those financial rankings, and it gave them a start on how you look something up when you want more information about the company. So I commend this to the Senate, Mr. Chairman, as a compromise. It will save 2/3 of the money that the bill itself seeks to save. It will result in a meaningful publication in this area.
Discussion, Senator Case.
Bill, Mr. Chairman, to my great friend from the land of perpetual snows, I especially this time of year, I ask again, the reason for the bill is, what reason could it possibly be to have this published in your local paper that you're going to read in the land of the great county of much snow, when your insurance company is not even listed? It's perhaps published in the Douglas paper. And when at the time you're buying insurance, they publish it 6 months later. There's no connection whatsoever. It doesn't do them any good. This would possibly do them some good. But I ask you to resist the amendment. It's definitely better than what we have now. It costs $200,000 to do this. And let's just presume, okay, we're supposed to represent the people of Wyoming. Think about how you purchase insurance. When was the last time you looked in any form of newspaper record to decide about an insurance company? And if a list were published, would you go find that list or be there at the right time to get that list? Because it's going to come out once a year. And then I suppose you can check the company you've already bought. But if you're looking to buy insurance, I know that all of you in here are smart enough to get on the internet and figure that out. And I'll tell you something else. You're the outlier, the minority, the less tech savvy. Everybody else in the state is way ahead of you on this one. And they're way ahead of me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I resist the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Senator Meyer.
And for the amendment. You know, technology is a wonderful thing, but folks, everybody isn't tech savvy. Now, let's, you know, A lot of people are. I mean, young kids are a lot more tech savvy than I am. You know, I'm a lot more tech savvy than my mother is. But I will tell you that this, without some newspaper publication, she doesn't have a link to the outside world. She'll watch Bloomberg once in a while, but those things don't come across there, you know, all the time, you know, and she likes to watch the Fox News Network. And I apologize for using the names I'm not supposed to use on the floor because those were identifying characteristics of them. But, Mr. Chairman, you know, a lot of folks do rely on the notices, whether it's this notice or the notices for other entities. I mean, I read the notices in my paper quite frequently because I want to know what's going on, and it's a good complete system. I have a lot of trouble just relying on one area of communication. We need multiple areas of communication if we're going to have informed consumers. And folks, if you buy into some of these companies that aren't that good, there are consequences.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, a lot of the same things I would reiterate, and I won't elaborate on a lot of them, but just a reminder that not everybody is tech savvy, even on this floor. I don't tweet, I don't Facebook, I don't blog. I do Google, and I can look up the information on the Internet. My mother can't, and my grandmother can't, and they're still alive, and they still have insurance. So we are transitioning, but out of respect for the older generation, I think it's, you know, the Wyoming or the WPA is aware of the problem. They're working on it, and I think the solution to this amendment is a step in the right direction, and perhaps even listing the websites in that listing in the newspaper to direct people to those websites. But it's all about the transparency, and it might be ineffective right now, but remember that it was just as ineffective going the opposite way and forcing 45 different companies to advertise in every newspaper in the state. So a compromise was reached. It wasn't a good one because it's ineffective. But the newspapers made that compromise realizing that, you know, hey, that's a lot of money. $600,000 a year in advertising costs to some of these companies, 500,000 people in Wyoming, almost a dollar per person. Insurance rates go up, not because of this, not a dollar per person. So I in favor of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and urge your favorable consideration of this amendment. It's a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called on the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment passes. Now on the bill. Question on the bill. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Senate File 36 is passed. Division being called. All in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. Three. Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 36 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77.
Senate File 77, Community College Construction, sponsored by Senator Schiffer. And act relating to construction of community college facilities. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Anderson, 02. Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've read the reading of the bill. Senator Cole.
There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 77, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment and defer to Senator Schiffer for an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Senator Close. Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Senate File 77, Community College Construction. What this does, it looks at the construction projects for the community colleges. And in essence, it patterns the way we do construction, very similar to the way we do construction of state buildings and construction over at the university, with one notable exception. We leave within the community college commission the job of setting the priorities that are for construction projects in all 7 community colleges. The commission sets those priorities. Then, Mr. Chairman will recall, that list comes to the legislature, and we appropriate money sometimes for all the projects, sometimes for just one or two, depending on, quite frankly, what the price of gas is. At that point, and here's where the change, here's what this bill does, it turns over the construction and management of those projects to the construction and management division within A&I. That's the essence of the bill. The community colleges support it. A&I, if the bill goes through, as it's going to be presented to you today, support it. And I support it, and I urge your support for it. If somebody called for the question, I'd sit down. Well, I better not.
Question being called.
I'll run through the bill very quickly. Over on page 2, the prioritization remains by the community college commission. Then the construction management division takes over from there. The balance of the bill is basically the wording that needs to change from commission to construction management division. So we get over on the page 8, and this is where the standing committee amendment comes in. I'm going to walk through first what's in the bill, and then what the education committee did. In the bill, I take one position from the community college commission. Now, it turns out that actually managing these projects, there were about 3 people that did part of it. So I took one position and part of the money, because Community College Commission is still going to have to do some contract work to set these priorities. And that's the 36, over on page 7, line 16, $36,023. And I move that over to the Construction Management Division under A&I, and I take an additional $108,000. And Mr. Chairman will recall a couple years ago, I don't know when we did it, but it's been sitting there, and I remembered it. We sent $500,000 to A&I for community college construction, so I go in and make sure that money gets spent for the one position that I'm talking about. In addition to that, we authorize A&I one more position, and A&I can pay for that out of their reserve fund for community college construction. And I thought that was adequate, and A&I went and visited when we had the bill in education, and now we have a little bit different, and this is the standing committee amendment. The Education Committee decided to appropriate $223,882. What that will do is fully fund both positions with a from the Community College Construction Management Appropriation. So the net sum is what we're really doing is offering, we're paying for the positions. One comes from the Community College Commission. One is created. That appropriation then falls down and is included in the division's standard budget, which means it'll roll over to the next biennium. I support the Education Committee's work. I think they always are educated when they do work. I'd like to, I'll answer any questions, but I'd like to dispose of the Standing Committee Amendment at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Sponsor this bill, and my sponsor just said it was a good idea to spend more money. I would just share with the Senate that when we heard this in the Appropriations Committee, we talked about this and the funding of it, and we felt like that the money was there to take care of this for this period of time. There was also a $500,000 appropriation that the construction management had in terms of money that we had appropriated earlier, where the money came from. So I would ask the body to resist this, and unless I'm missing something, I think we should leave the appropriation as it is with the bill.
For the discussion, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I feel I'm in somewhat between a rock and a hard place because my co-sponsor and the chairman of appropriations is with me on the old part and the chairman of the education chairman on the new part, and I'm not sure I want to get in the middle of that wreck, so just vote your conscience.
Mr. Majority Leader, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd urge you to vote no on the education amendment to add additional funding. You know, folks, part we'll get back on the bill and talk about some of the issues that may arise. But a lot of this construction has been taking place on the various campuses. They have employees, and it's all working now. The notion that you have to hire more people, add more money to do something that's already being undertaken, this is something that if there's a need for new positions, then you put it off to hearings and allow the JAC to have hearings, find out how the community colleges are currently handling their construction. More than $30,000 ought to be returned to the state to handle this construction management service. So it's certainly easy to throw out more money and then allow the community colleges to save because they're no longer doing their construction management. But I'd urge you to vote the amendment down and let the JAC approach this during their during their budget hearings next year. 1 year is not going to make a difference.
Senator Meyer.
And Mr. Chairman, and another fact came out is that, you know, when we had the ARRA funds, or the American Recovery Act funds, the Construction Management Division did all this work anyway without any additional employees. And I was trying to figure out why they even needed employees coming over from the community college. But they got them. But, you know, we felt we really couldn't act on the original Standing Committee motions for some reason or another, but I think that this is the appropriate place to strip this budget down, and then we'll have a little bit of time under the belt, and we'll take a look at this next year in appropriations.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Standing Committee on Senate File 77, say aye. Those opposed?
No.
Amendment number one to Standing Committee Amendment number one to Senate File 77 has failed. Any discussion on the bill? Senator Senator Schiffer?
Yes, before I get a question. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me respond to some concerns that I'm hearing. One, folks, and Mr. Chairman, you'll recall the ERA money or whatever, the one-time money, that was for maintenance. That wasn't for building construction. But understand what we're doing. A&I will have people that, in fact, supervise these building projects. A&I will, and they'll go through their routine just as they have done for the university. They'll do the value engineering. They'll decide how to bid it. I'll give you a couple examples. We've had three building projects at three different community colleges. They were all bid with construction manager at risk. That was the poorest way to bid that there is for those three projects. We could have saved millions of dollars if we would have had A&I in there saying, here's how to bid this, and bid it efficiently and save money. I understand why community colleges use the construction manager at risk system. It's easy. The price is locked in, and they know what they're going to spend. But it is not always the wisest way to bid a construction project or a big maintenance project. That's why we're bringing in, and the state has a professional staff that can do this stuff and do it right. The second thing, the community colleges do have some people on board, or they hire them part-time or whatever they do, temporary, when they've got a big building project. Quite frankly, we can't control what a community college spends its money on. They may remember, Mr. Chairman, they get an appropriation from us based on the number of students they've got and the course offerings and the weighted this and all that stuff, and it's a formula. And that's and how they deliver is up to them. I think this will be a savings to them. I think we can do the job better and more efficiently if we have the expertise of the A&I Construction Management Division. Now, if I haven't answered any questions, go ahead and ask them, but I think I've covered them all.
Nope. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of the bill, and I'll take a minute to talk about it, and I would hope that you, too, could support the bill. Recently, one of my communities within my district floated a special purpose tax intended for the construction of a building, a satellite building, off of one of our community colleges. The community was so committed to doing what they did. First of all, we passed the first ever special purpose tax in that county. Second of all, in our conversation as to what the state match could be, should be, we examined the kind of a traditional 50% or whatever. Given the economic conditions and the demand for a trained workforce in that community, the community proposed to the voters that they build a major portion of the entire building. In other words, float the whole bond, so to speak, float the whole taxes. They did. They met that commitment. So then we then asked for that. We got that. But the idea that the community is putting a lot of their own money into that brings then how they get their input into that in all the complicated processes of the different methods of architectural planning, building and design, letting of the bids, construction, and that whole thing. Well, what we did, we had the conversation, and I, being a member, an ex-officio member on the Building Commission, and having seen how really professional, how really well the construction management group handles all these immense problems around the state, I suggested that they do exactly as this bill would dictate, that they approach construction management in helping them make many of the decisions that they were confronted with. And they have, and we're just early in the process, but they've already started talking and working with the community college. This doesn't usurp any authority from the community or from the commission. This is a supplement, I think, to the commission. It's not a supplant effort. But the point of it is, I think that going forward, and if we can build the building that our community wants, designed in a professional manner and whatnot, at some point, having built that building, they might well ask me to come back to this body for some additional monies, and I don't think that rules or law allows for furniture and materials, but if they were wanting to build onto that to provide, say, a welding lab or a nurse's lab or something like that, when they came with that request, the state would then have assurances that all the standards with the existing building had been met through the help and the assistance of the construction management, and make then, I think, more of a seamless effort between the local and the state. And for that, I think, from a practical nature, this is a very good bill, and I would ask you to support it.
Senator, Majority Floor Leader Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I neither honor or support of the bill. Just a little bit of history. The construction management services out of ANI is really a pretty recent evolution. I think we installed it about when we started having more revenues and more capital construction in the, I want to say, the early 2000s. And the reason we did it is partly because we had just gotten through building a prison. A few years later, the cost overruns were enormous. And at the end of the day, there were construction defects. We asked who's responsible for the construction defects. Nobody has an answer. We were just finding that we could not control costs. And so we decided to put together a group that would be responsible for design, for construction management, and then choosing what delivery system to take place. And I think we've had great luck. I think we have, for the first time, we're putting out budgets that we're adhering to. We have, in fact, reversions on these projects. If the community colleges would like to take advantage of these resources, I think there's no repurpose in not allowing them to do it. But I would caution you a couple things for those of you that are in the community college districts. And I do believe the bill may need a couple other tweaks as we go through. Because we wanted to have more control over some of the capital facilities being constructed on the University of Wyoming, we have now had a couple projects that we've administered through the Construction Management Division, partly because we as legislators wanted to have a stronger role in making sure that these buildings are hitting the targets because we're funding them. And what we're finding is that oftentimes the university or the faculty who are on the committees to do the design may have a different entire idea than we did. And we're putting the money out. We are sitting on the floor arguing for the space to be used for a STEM building, science, technology, engineering, math, or whatever. And we want to make sure that our legislative purposes were being provided. Now, what ends up happening is that historically with the community colleges, they go out, they assess their needs, they come and ask for an appropriation. But what the bill doesn't really tell you is what about the design phase? Do you want the construction management division to actually participate in the design? So, and here are some of the tensions we had. When the construction management division was overseeing the Supreme Court building, had they had it purely their way, we'd have had a court. We might have had a building that did not have the original native stone. They might not have had marble inside. And it took a lot of legislative activity to say, no, this is what we want. This is where we're going. And when you go to the university experience, there's a lot of tension between the folks that are designing that really want to do the space configurations out in the field in Laramie versus the construction management people who are saying, you know, you don't need that. You know, if you were to rebuild this room, do you want Tiffany glass? Do you want woodwork? Who's going to make the call? And so there has to be at some point, I mean, there has to be a dog and there's got to be a tail. And what I read here is I don't see the word design there, so I'm not sure whether or not you're simply going to say that we're going to go out and do our level one, level two designs at the college level, and all we're asking for you is the construction management services and just to monitor it. I think that if the state's involved, you need to have them involved in the original design, the space determination. But these folks here, we hire them to get the most bang for our buck, but somebody at some point has to come in and say, you know, we hear you, but this building is going to be a flagship building on Sheridan College or Northwest Community College, and we want it to have marble in the entryway. We want some cool things going there. And how do you stay involved? And how do you get what you want? And that's something that needs to be thought about a little bit before you just simply say construction management takes it over. I think the problem is going to be solved, but I do think you have to decide, do you want them to have the design and construction management? And ultimately, I suppose your budget will dictate, but do you want to have less square footage and nicer inside, or do you want to have a larger building footprint without all of the enhancements inside? And somebody makes that decision, and this bill, and having those decisions made in Cheyenne, you're going to find conflicts unless we begin to work out a process to mediate between those conflicts.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few comments on this, and I think it's headed in the right direction. There's been frustration from our community colleges and their board of trustees as we've struggled with financing of these projects and prioritization and the lists, and we as a legislature give them directive, and then we change in midstream and say, well, maybe not workforce development, but maybe this. And so a lot of time has been wasted, and I see the advantages of this combining to a central office. But there is a risk involved, Mr. Chairman, and that risk is it's just a bit further removed from these college districts and the citizens and the people, and all in the effort of saving money. And I believe that we can. But the risk is this, you know, and I would ask the question, if you think we're doing such a great job, look at the job trailers at UW on those projects that we've had, or the projects here at the Capitol, but specifically at the university, most of those contractors are from out of state. And it happens very naturally. When you combine it to an A&I or construction management division, now instead of doing one or two projects, now they're doing six or seven. And when you do that load of work, you attract more attention from out of state, and the bids are let, and we do save money. But my point is, and the risk is that it is a much harder nut to crack as a local contractor once you've been established in this loop of construction or furnishings or whatever. And if you have to travel to Cheyenne to try to break into that little loop, that little niche, it's much more difficult. You can take my word for that. It is very difficult. And so that's the risk that we face. Do we save money? I believe we can. But the risk is that we're just further removed from the in-state contractors, and I'd walk cautiously on just for that reason with this particular bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shiver.
Mr. Chairman, let me try and respond. In terms of how the process goes, and I'll draw your attention over to page 3, line 17. Upon prioritization, and that's where we handle it. Once those projects are prioritized, then construction management division takes over, because they are, and this is exactly what they've done over at the university. They take over the design, and as I said, the value engineering, all of that stuff that comes out of there. And if you want to have more marble and fewer bathrooms or more gym space and less classrooms, that's what they do, is they sit down, and they've done it over at the university, and it has been successful. We've built some buildings over there that particularly, one I can think of, where an individual donated the building, and he had pretty specific ideas of what was going to go in there. And the university had some pretty specific ideas of what they thought was going to go in there. And they found out the guy with the cash is the one that decides what goes in the building, which was a good lesson for them. But we built it. But these people are good at doing that. And the expertise they bring is good. They cannot set whether a community college needs a shop or a classroom building or a nursing, you know, they don't decide what the college needs. Colleges decide that, the pros. But once they do, then we start managing it. In terms of the concern about local contractors, if you want to wipe out all the local contractors, bid them as construction manager at risk, because then it's one bid. That's why colleges like it. But I believe you will find the construction management division, they don't automatically go there. They may break a project up into components, and that opens the door, particularly in terms of the bonding requirement. If it's a great big mammoth company, oftentimes a Wyoming company cannot bond for that much. But if you break those contracts up, then you're opening the door to local people coming in. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm not faulting the colleges for construction manager at risk projects. I understand why they do it. But if we provide the expertise, which we've got in A&I, then we don't have to. That isn't the only way to bid. There are a number of ways to bid, all of which open up the door to local businesses more than the way we're doing it now. Will they all get, you know, will they get every bid? I don't know about that, but at least they'll have access to it if they don't have to. And the bonding is the big one. It just, our little companies can't do it.
Any other questions? Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is a good bill.
Senator Meyer?
Just saying it's a good bill. I looked at an appropriation, came out 5-0. Had a little concern because a lot of those have been addressed. I think the sponsor's done a great job. Let's kick her out.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 77. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 77 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 98. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move that this Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Well, you've
not as much as Driscoll does.
You heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Thank you.
You ready?
Yeah, I can't hear you.
All right, I got it on. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 106, do pass amended. Senate File 36, do pass amended. Senate File 77, do pass. Senator Escobel, Chairman.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried and the report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
January the 25th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 122, Expansion of Medicaid, reports back with a recommendation that it do not pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Myers, and Perkin. No, Senator Hastert, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 25th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants, reports back the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 25th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 110, Registration Fees, Trailers with Living Quarters. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
We're at that order of business, signing of Enrolled Act. Senate Enrolled Act number one. Reading clerk, read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number one, being original Senate File 104.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number one, being original Senate File 104. I have so signed. Mr. Majority, is there anything else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until tomorrow.
3 p.m.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until Monday, and that would be, let me get my
28th.
Yep, it's the 28th of January at 10 a.m.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. We're going to finish our work on Senate File 135, Assisted Living Facilities, and we're going to take up Senate File 148, Emergency Medical Services.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock in S11 by the Smoking Lounge to take up Senate File 144, Bidder Qualifications, Community Colleges 2, and Senate File 145, Merit Career Technical Scholarships.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, meet Monday 10 minutes after adjournment, room S14, to review Senate File 123, Senate File 130, and Senate File 158. And my apologies, Mr. President. Senate File 123, National Guard, Armory, Senate File 130, Professional Licensing, Military, and Senate File 158, Front License Plates.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet with the House Appropriations Committee next Tuesday, the 29th, 15 minutes after adjournment in room 204 to work on the supplemental budget bill.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess on Monday to take up House Bill 52, Engross Workplace Safety Initiative, House Bill 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System, House Bill 116, Engross Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, and House Bill 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemption.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Judiciary Committee will meet Monday, January 28th at 8 a.m. in room S1, and we will continue our discussion of Senate File 120, Sexual Assault Protection Orders, and we will take up Senate File 159, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death. And if time allows, we will take up Senate File 138, Commutation of Sentences.
Further announcements. Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's going to be a silencer demonstration tomorrow, January 26th.
noon to 2 p.m. They're going to carpool. If you would like to go out, you can leave your name at the Senate receptionist, and they'll help carpool you out there. But it'll be from noon to 2 tomorrow, and it's open to the public. Anybody that wants to go, you can go see how loud or quiet or how they work. So, thank you.
Members of the Senate, good work this week. Travel safely. Enjoy your families. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion's carried. The Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, January 28th.